Thanks for tuning to Digital Voices Podcast, where we chat digital transformation, challenges and opportunities across healthcare and life sciences. And now, your host, Ed Marks.
Hi, welcome to another drop for Digital Voices. Really excited to introduce to you my friend and colleague and just a great all-around person and clinician, Dr. David Chotsky. He is the New York City Commissioner of Health. Before we bring him in, you know this is Digital Voices, and we try to hear of the voice from everyone in healthcare and life sciences. So everyone, most importantly, starting with the patient, to the provider, to the payer, pharma, everywhere, but also public health, and that will be part of our focus in this drop, is the voice, the digital voice of public health. I had the opportunity to serve with Dr. Chotsky, who I'll just call Dave, in New York City when I was with Health and Hospitals a few years ago. And we worked together on some pretty gnarly, challenging items. And that was really to complete the implementation of electronic health record in a very complex environment and public health. And Dave was just one of the fantastic type of clinicians that you like to work with, who was really always looking to solve issues that might have come up and just work with other clinicians sharing how, you know, the EHR would be beneficial for patient care, for population health specifically. And so we had a great time working together, and we are very successful as an entire team in implementing electronic health records at New York City Health and Hospital. So I always have very fond memories of that time together. And so, Dave, as you come in to the drop here, we always ask two standard questions. And the first one, because everyone wants to know, what kind of music do you like? So when you chill, when you're like relaxing, what kind of music do you like to listen to?
Well, there are two sort of go-to genres for me, both very much influenced by my upbringing in Louisiana. You know, I grew up in Baton Rouge. I'm the son of Indian immigrants. So people always find it a little bit curious, but I love country music because of the fact that I grew up in Baton Rouge. And actually, my love for country music came from my mother, who immigrated from Mumbai, India, and had never heard a note of country music until she immigrated to the United States. So that's one. And then the other, of course, is that very particular New Orleans style of jazz, which, you know, of course, all jazz is characterized by improvisation, which I think is an inspiring way to think about creativity. But particularly for New Orleans, there's a joy to it, you know, a soul to it that always animates me.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And what about your life message or mantra? Is there something, a principle or something that is really central to your life and kind of forms and shapes who you are?
Well, there are several, but the one that comes to mind was actually crystallized for me where you and I met at New York City Health and Hospitals, which, as you know, is the largest public system in the country. It's a place where a lot of inspiring work is done every day. But it can also be a challenging place to work, you know, because we were always constrained by resources. We were a part of the city government with all of the challenges that entails. And so anyway, the mantra is better to light a single candle than curse the darkness. Mm-hmm. And I found, particularly in my career in public service, that's something to live by, because there are always opportunities to do better and serve others. But sometimes you got to be willing to just light that single candle rather than get lost in all of the things that could and should be better.
Yeah, I love it. Those are really good words to live by, no doubt. Tell us a little bit about your story, Dave, especially, you know, immigrant parents from India, and now you're the New York City Commissioner of Health. Tell us that journey, how that all transpired.
Sure. Well, I you know, start by saying that I've just been really lucky, you know, throughout my career and throughout my life. Like many, you know, people raised in immigrant families, I owe everything, you know, to my parents and to my family, who worked extraordinarily hard for me to have the opportunities that I had during my life. I've tried to make the most of those opportunities, but with the spirit, you know, that my parents taught me, which is that it's not about serving oneself. And this is really influenced by their culture, including the religion that they grew up with, Jainism, which is, you know, oriented around the concept of nonviolence and service to others. I think growing up, I was someone who didn't have doctors in my family. I didn't have early role models for what it was like to practice medicine. But what I did have was a firm grasp on how health was connected to opportunity, whether it was seeing my father, you know, struggle with getting diagnosed with diabetes in his 40s, and you know how that affected his life and his ability to do some of the things that he loved, or the fact that I had asthma as a child and had to be hospitalized, and you know those experiences always stuck with me and kind of led me to think about health writ large. And so I had some very formative experiences at the Louisiana Department of Health, both before and after Hurricane Katrina, working with a global nonprofit organization that was dedicated to improving access to medicines in poor countries, and then ultimately going to medical school and residency and learning what it was like to, you know, to actually take care of patients. And I've sought to bring those two, you know, halves together in my professional career, the idea that at the end of the day, it's not about medicine, it's about health. And then the second part, which is, but the beauty of medicine is that you get to be a part of someone's life, often on one of the worst days of their lives. And so, you know, there's so much that both that larger vantage point on health and public health has to offer that has to be combined with what we're able to do through the practice of medicine and through healthcare delivery. So, you know, here in New York City, I've had a chance to be what I think of as a primary care doctor with a public health heart. I did that at New York City Health and Hospitals, really, you know, taking this idea of population health as essentially a public health mindset within a large healthcare delivery system. And now I'm getting to see it from the other side, which is being a doctor and someone who really cares about the patient experience and how we should think about serving people on an individual level, to my work leading the public health department for the city. So those are, you know, that's sort of the intersection that I think will define my whole career.
Yeah, that's a really great story, and I loved every aspect of it and your whole philosophy around that. You know, Dave, you mentioned public health, and many of our audience, while they know public health conceptually, I don't know that they really know the difference, because I say that because I didn't know the difference. When I came to New York City Health and Hospitals, I thought I did, but I really didn't until I actually served there. And would you maybe explain a little bit more, you know, the difference between serving at a private sector hospital, perhaps like Cleveland Clinic, where I came from most recently, and in a public health system? You know, what are some of the nuances and differences?
Sure. Well, I'll start by giving you one of my favorite definitions of public health, which is that public health saved your life today, but you just didn't know it. Because so much of what public health does is unsung and invisible. Actually, Ed, you'll appreciate this, because I often used to say to my information technology, you know, my IT counterparts at health and hospitals, that IT is like the public health of any organization. You know, you're the backbone, you're the connective tissue. When something goes wrong, everyone knows about it, right? Because it's right. Catastrophic. But when things go right, nobody knows about it. And that's kind of the analogous paradox, you know, that defines public health as well. So, you know, what we get to do in the city health department is all of those things that people have seen during COVID-19 in a much more, you know, tangible and visceral way, how important, prevention is, because the effectiveness of our ability to social distance or wear masks or get people tested or now getting people vaccinated, that has a direct translation into what people are seeing in hospitals, you know, whether our intensive care units are full or not, whether we have to commandeer, you know, parts of a hospital to be the emergency department overflow. And so that connection is really, you know, what public health is about. Moving upstream as far as possible so that we can avoid those catastrophic outcomes, and do it in a way that allows people to live their most fulfilled lives.
Yeah. And, you know, my observation, and this might be somewhat controversial to some who might be listening, is that public health is very missional. So you could serve in a private sector, and if your goal was material, being very careful how I word this, you know, you might not choose public health. Public health, I was just really taken by the clinicians I met, not just the clinicians, the administrators as well, who could go to private sector and do very well, but they felt this call to public health and to being a servant in that way. And my respect just grew immensely. And I was just, I just consider myself so fortunate to have had that experience. So again, I don't mean to say that someone who doesn't choose public health has made the wrong decision or anything like that. I'm just saying that I came to really appreciate those who chose public health as a profession. And you're right, you know, the advantages of public health are unseen until a crisis emerges. So thank you for your service.
Yeah. Oh, well, no. I mean, it goes, no thanks are necessary. I find it richly rewarding, you know, in so many ways. And I would just build on what you said, which I think you articulated very well, by saying that in many ways, you know, that mission aspect allows people to have a much deeper sense of intrinsic motivation, which translates into the quality of the work, you know, and the performance. Really, it has to do with how energized are you when you get out of bed in the morning, right?
Right.
And I think for a lot of people, it's not about, you know, money or material rewards, as you've pointed out. It's about a sense of purpose. And
yes.
Certainly I can say that, you know, that's what propels me even during some very tough days, because of the sense that the work is so worthy and we know that we are, you know, having an impact on people's trajectories of health and illness. And that is, you know, I think that's the richest reward that one can get. And I'll just say one final thing on this because I feel very passionately about it. And, you know, I see my counterpart sometimes in the private sector or working for nonprofit hospital systems. And of course, there's great work to be done in a range of different environments. But what I always say is that if you're really looking for the deepest challenge, and if you've actually got that sense of competitiveness of like, I want to climb the highest mountain, you know, I want to, you know how in the Olympics you get rated not just on your performance, but on the degree of difficulty of your routine. Well, the degree of difficulty working in the public sector and trying to transform healthcare or improve public health, you can't get higher than that level of difficulty. And so I think there's actually a pull for the best people in the world to come and work in the public sector because of the sheer challenge of it as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we're going to transition here to digital. And I want to say the same sort of thing with digital, because we didn't have, when we implemented, you know, it's the basics of digital is electronic health record, right? And then we get to do all the cool things from there, the virtual care and things like that. But we didn't have the same resources that you might find in the public sector, I mean, in the private sector. But we did as good or better with our implementation and utilization, because of that sort of innate desire, like that mission that you're describing, because everyone wanted it to work and make it work for the patients and make it work for the clinicians, that again, even though we may have been under-resourced compared to private sector, you didn't know it based on the outcomes. And so that can help bridge that gap as well. So let's talk about digital in public health. So David, what are you seeing today in terms of digital transformation, and what sort of things do you anticipate in the future?
Yeah, well, you know, these things are I'm sure familiar to you and to many of your listeners as well. But it's the simple notion of opening up more channels for access. You know, that's I think the most compelling broad frame with respect to the intersection of digital health and public health. I'll just give you a couple of examples, particularly during COVID-19. We run a program known as Early Intervention, which is specifically to provide services for kids, newborns all the way to the age of 3, who are showing some signs of developmental delay or disability. And we partner them up with the services that they need, you know, whether it's nursing or physical therapy or other types of therapy, to ensure that that they proceed along their developmental pathway more appropriately. When COVID-19 hit, like so much else, we had to immediately switch that, you know, to a virtual channel, starting telephonically and then starting to build in video as well. And I think, you know, what I'm looking at this stage in the pandemic is how do we take that experience and build the right hybrid model that is actually better than what we were doing back in January 2020, where we had built an excellent program, you know, that was primarily based on in-person, often home visiting, but which we had to, by virtue of, you know, the necessity of the pandemic, switch to a different channel. So how do we leverage things to build the right hybrid approaches that take the best of both of those experiences? And that's actually a different challenge, a different problem than both of what we had before, right? Solving it in person or switching it all the way to a digital approach. And I think that's where we're going to see a lot of creativity unlocked in the coming months.
Yeah, that's a great example and where we're headed in terms of that hybrid model. You're right, because there's not one size fits all. It's not all traditional. It's not all virtual, but it really is meeting the patients where they are, and everyone has sort of a different need and a different way of interacting, and we can't assume that it's just the way that we want to do things. So what do you think is in the future in terms of public health? Is it something that you think will be expanded? And it's really a setup for the next question on digital, but do you think that public health will be expanded as a result of what's happened in the past year, more focus on it? Where do you think it's headed in general?
Well, I think that's up to us. And, you know, one of the things that I'm really having an eye toward, even as we continue to focus on our COVID response, is let's not lose this moment, you know, with respect to the focus on public health, which has been in the spotlight, in the public eye, you know, understood by the layperson in a way that is very different than, you know, than the last few years, the last few decades. In fact, I reached back into history, you know, to think about the right parallel. After the 1918 influenza pandemic, which was devastating, you know, globally, just as COVID-19 is, historians now label it the forgotten pandemic, because in many ways, not enough changed after 1918. And so I think it's up to us to make this different and to ensure that, you know, when the spotlight starts to move away from public health, that that we are well positioned, you know, in terms of investment, in terms of our workforce, in terms of how people think about the role of public health, so that we're much better prepared, not just for the next public health crisis, which will happen, but also for all of those slower moving disasters in between crises. I'm talking about you know, chronic diseases and opioid use disorder and mental health, you know, the things that wreak havoc on people and families every day, but which, because it's not in a compressed time frame as we're seeing with COVID-19, we don't quite deal with in the same way. So I think that's a long way of saying this is public health's moment, but we as leaders have to grab it and ensure that we don't lose the opportunity to put it up on the pedestal where it should be.
Yeah, no, I agree with you completely. And yeah, if this wasn't the tsunami warning sign that we needed, you know, I'm not sure what else could be. So, and I like how you painted the picture of the slow moving pandemics, right? We don't think of them as such, like chronic disease, but they really are in aggregate. So we really need to be attacking on all fronts. So Dave, our audience is primarily chief digital officers, some IT, but definitely some forward-looking individuals. So what would be your message, you know, from a public health, a clinician point of view, where should we be focused on in the next 1 to 3 years? What technologies or what can we do to help public health, to help clinicians, to help our shared patients?
Well, thanks for asking such a thoughtful question. And, you know, I think my my biggest piece of advice would be to focus on what I think of as a doctor as the patients we do not see. You know, in medicine, we often talk about, you know, making rounds in the hospital or seeing patients in the clinic. But from the public health vantage point, it's really about the patients we do not see, right? Why is it that there are some people who are in distress, but they don't show up to, you know, the door of the healthcare system? Why is it that some people only show up when they are truly in extremis, you know, in a crisis, and they absolutely can't do anything else at that point? And I think that in our digital solutions, we have to keep that foremost in mind. How do we think about engaging the people beyond, you know, the first three concentric circles where, all right, you've got people who are avid, you know, you've got people who are being engaged one way or another, but then there are people who we have to work harder to engage, and we need to build our solutions with those folks in mind, and particularly that most remote, you know, circle, the patients we do not see. How do we draw them in? And how do we make that actually part of what we are solving for?
Yeah, I love it. That's a great challenge to myself and to my colleagues about where the hockey puck is moving and how do we reach all those individuals and those patients. And ideally, we reach them before they become patients. That's really the message.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. So, Dave, I always end with this, and I know we covered a lot of ground in a short amount of time, but there may be something I forgot. So, this is really a chance, if there's any other message that you would like to send to any of my colleagues out there in the digital space across the health and life sciences, you know, how else might we serve you, serve the populations, the public health?
I think the only message I would add is reach out to your public health department, you know, get to know those unsung heroes that I mentioned. Think about solutions that can serve them, because we've seen just how vital they are you know, to the health of everyone. And it's a place that is ripe for innovation and creativity. So I would just say, you know, foster those relationships and get to know them. And there's a vast, vast world of good to be done if we're able to bring those things together.
All right. That's excellent counsel. I love it. I put out that challenge to all my colleagues and myself. I think that'll help break down silos, and that's what one of the things we try to do with Digital Voices, and that's why we're across all of health and life sciences, is try to break down silos instead of, you know, staying in our little stovepipes of providers and payers and pharma and patients and things like that. And that's a really good way of reaching across to public health. So Dave, thank you for being our guest. Always a pleasure to reconnect with you since our days in New York City. And again, thank you for all that you do, and I appreciate your time with us.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure being on. Thanks for having me.
Hey there, I'm Daniel, one of the producers of this podcast. I'm usually not on the mic except for that awesome intro and outro, but I wanted to take a quick second to invite you to this year's Digital Voices Conference. Last year, I attended Digital Voices, and what I learned helped me level up in my career, my understanding of digital care, and impress my boss. This year's conference features chief digital officers from GE, Zoom, and Anthem. These are the foremost leaders in the space when it comes to digital healthcare. The conference is 100% virtual, so you don't have to mess with travel or PTO. Just log in at the time of the show. Digital Voices 2021 will be on Thursday, June 17th at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, and registration is 100% free. Just go to digitalvoices.com. That's DGTLvoices.com to register. Thanks again for listening.
Thank you for listening to Digital Voices Podcast with Ed Martin. If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe on your preferred streaming service and leave a rating and review. And most importantly, thanks again for listening.